The Clusterfuck Job, written by Kissa Hawkin and read by Tiny Pink Mouse. Reed thinks he might understand Ella a little better now, shifting his tie again. It's choking him. Leave it, Morgan admonishes, slapping his hands and straightening the knot. You can't look nervous.
I don't see how, Reed says. I am nervous.
Don't let it show, Morgan says, resting a hand on Reed's shoulder. We'll be right outside. All you have to do is say the word. Hodge rounds the corner and looks Reed up and down. You have to be suave and flirtatious, he says, his face, as usual, devoid of all emotion. Think you can manage that?
Just pretend you're Morgan, Rossi says over the radio, and Reed can hear Prentice's choked-off laugh through Rossi's comm.
It's the third bar they've tried today. If they strike out here, they'll have to switch to Plan B. Reed doesn't know how he feels about being a serial killer's type. Skinny, long-haired white guys, more polished than he is, but he can fake that part well enough, he thinks. Hopefully. He takes a deep breath and steps into the bar, not sure if he should be praying for this to work or not work. He knows it's the easiest way to catch the killer, and he has faith in his team. But even the best planned scenarios can go wrong, and he's been on the wrong side of that enough to know even the victims that get saved are never the same. He keeps his sunglasses on as he sweeps his eyes over the people in the bar on his way to get his first drink. Stockbroker bars are a weird place, but he's got the hang of them now, and this one seems to have all the usual suspects. There's the tech squad. 4 men and 2 women tapping away on their computers, watching the numbers tick by on the 3 enormous TVs around their booths. There's the socialites, 4 men and 5 women, drinking and talking and consulting their Blackberries every few seconds. A few old-fashioned men, talking on their phones in low undertones, all of them with their eyes glued to those huge flat-panel TVs. The profile on their killer says male, late 30s to early 40s, so that takes out the techno crowd and more than half the men with Blackberries glued to their hands. There are 3 men on the phone, 2 escalating their voices as the price on something starts to fall, and the 3rd still talking in low tones. Reed rests an elbow on the bar, doing the best he can to look casual and, he supposes, inviting. No one has looked yet, but most of the people in places like this don't look at each other until the market closes. He's narrowed it down to the old-fashioned 3 guys on the phone. The killer wasn't savvy enough to clean the cache on his victims' computers after he killed them. Reed doubts he's a Blackberry kind of guy. The man talking in low tones is looking down, with a certain amount of concentration. He hasn't been watching the tape much at all. The 2 other guys are more likely candidates anyway, as he seems too old for the profile, 50 at least, maybe 60 if he's kept himself up. Reed waits impatiently for the market to close so he can get this over with. Reed grabs his drink and heads over to the phone talker's corner, best to insinuate himself into their area while they're otherwise occupied. Mickey on it, and I don't want any... Reed stops in his tracks. That was definitely not on the TV. As a matter of fact, it sounded like someone on his comm. He turns to go back to the bar, and sure enough, as he passes the older gentleman, he gets another snatch of conversation in his ear. No, not Danny, he can't be trusted. He bottoms up his drink, setting it down on the bar when he gets there. He glances around the bar again, briefly. He looks more carefully over the techno group. The 2 women and 1 of the young men are busily multitasking, tapping away on their keyboards with their eyes never leaving the TV. 2 of the other men are typing and glancing back and forth between their screens and the TV. The last guy, though, a young, handsome black man who is clearly not a stockbroker, even though he's dressed for the bar, he's ignoring the TV and talking to himself. He's not wearing a Bluetooth, and he's staring intently at his computer, working in fits and starts, definitely not a stockbroker. Reed grabs his second drink, deposits his sunglasses in his coat pocket, and slowly walks away from the bar, pausing when a tinny voice comes across on his comm again.
It happens when he gets directly between the tech guy and the old guy on the phone, and nothing that comes true seems like it's of any interest at all, at least from his investigation standpoint. He heads back to the bar and calls Garcia. "Fairy godmother at your service," Garcia says, and Reed smiles into the phone. "Garcia, it looks like there's another team in here, doing some surveillance on a guy. I'm getting something over the comm that's probably from a bug in his phone, and there's a guy hacking away at his computer. Can you take a look around?" "You got it, sweet cheeks. I'll call you with anything I find."
"Anything to worry about?" Hodge says over the comm. Garcia hangs up with a click in his ear, and Reed keeps the phone up long enough to say, "Don't think so. I've got a few things in my sights, and they're not the guy being tapped."
He hangs up the phone and Hodge says reassuringly, "All right, ignore it then, and get on with it." Reed grabs his drink and turns to make his way back to his two suspects, when he runs into a pretty blonde woman with a ponytail. She's dressed a little oddly for a stockbroker bar, but since she's not actively watching the tape, he figures she's one of the many people who come by to get dates with potential millionaires. She apologizes briefly and he answers with a curt, "No problem," before making his way to the back of the bar, where his two potential unsubs are still on their phones. One of them glances at him briefly and turns back to the TV. The other still has his back to Reed, so he takes the opportunity to grab a table a few feet behind them both, trying to keep his eyes on as many suspicious people as possible. And that number is just getting bigger and bigger as he realizes his wallet is gone and the blonde woman is nowhere to be seen. His phone rings, and he tries not to jump. "Okay," Garcia says, before Reed can even say anything. "Your fake ID is being run, and I hadn't really planned for it to be more than a way to make sure you could get a beer, so if this guy is any good at all..." Reed does his best to glance at the tech guy surreptitiously, and sure enough, he's looking more and more alarmed. "Damn it," Reed says, and Morgan comes on over the comm. "Reed, you need us?" "No," Reed says. "Whatever else is going on here, the guy who glanced at him earlier is taking a longer look, and if Reed could just disentangle himself from this situation, he may be able to get him on the hook. Garcia, can you send something to this guy? Communicate with him somehow." He glances up at his mark and gives a smirky smile, the best he can manage. The suspect nods at him, smiling. "I think I've got something, if you can just keep them..." A muscular, long-haired guy who knows how to move comes into the bar, dressed in jeans and a flannel shirt, so obviously out of place that half the bar turns to stare. "Oh shit," Reed says. Flannel shirt guy looks around the room and locks eyes with Reed. "Oh shit," Reed says again, as flannel shirt guy starts walking his way. The door bursts open again, and Morgan's voice rings out, "Hey." The other guy turns to look, and bristles as he sizes Morgan up. Reed glances over at his lead suspect, and he looks like he might jump ship, so he needs to get these people out of here. "Derek," Reed says loudly, "I told you to stop harassing me. We're not together, and that's the end of it." Morgan looks up, and thankfully catches on immediately. "Trying to replace me?" Morgan says, looking up and down Flannel Guy contemptuously. "With this scum?" "Hey," Flannel Guy says, looking confused and angry all at once. "I'm not interested in your boy here." "Elliot," Tech Guy calls. "Elliot, leave off the lover's quarrel and get over here." "Hardison," Elliot says to the guy, glaring at him over his shoulder. He looks back at Reed and Morgan and puts his hand up dismissively, always calling. Elliot walks away, grumbling in annoyance, and takes a seat across from Hardison. Reed glances nervously over his shoulder at his suspect, who's watching with interest. He turns to glare at Morgan, tilting his head toward the door. "I told you to leave me alone," Reed says, giving Morgan a shove toward the door. "It's over. Get it through your thick skull." For a second, Reed thinks Morgan might laugh or just shake his head at the weirdness of it all, but he pulls a stern look and shakes his head. "You'll come back. You always do." Morgan exits the bar as loudly as he came in, and Reed sits down into his chair heavily. The other team is now sitting around Hardison's booth. Elliot, the blonde woman, and an older-looking guy, sloppily dressed but sharp despite that. And they're split between watching Reed and his suspect and the other guy on the phone, who stubbornly ignored the whole scene between Reed, Elliot, and Morgan. Obnoxious ex? Reed looks up at his lead suspect, and every alarm bell in his head is ringing. He fits the profile to a T, and something about him just creeps Reed out. He's working the knot off his tie loose, and he pulls it off and stuffs it in his pocket, opening a couple of buttons on his shirt. "Yeah," Reed says, finishing his drink. Doesn't take no for an answer. "I know the type. Warren Miles," he says, holding out his hand. Reed shakes it, and it's the strangest handshake he's ever felt. It's not firm, like business handshakes, or nervous, like date handshakes. It's just sort of warm. "Will," he says, hoping Warren chalks up his nerves to his fight with Morgan. "Will Sinclair." "Well, Will, you look like you could use a drink. May I?" Reed follows him to the bar, clenching his fists a couple of times to get rid of his shakes. "Scotch and soda," Warren says to the bartender, and then looks at Reed. "What'll you have?" Reed turns to the bartender, and is surprised to see the young blonde woman, not the stylish young man from earlier. "The same, please," Reed answers, and she smiles broadly at them and takes Warren's cash. Reed's never really been on the dating scene, but he knows a lot of random information, and he spent last night reading up about the stock market and the latest trends. Luckily, Warren seems to be able to talk about himself and his work endlessly, so a few guiding remarks from Reed, and he's passing along enough information for Reed to be nearly certain this is their unsub. When he leans forward to pull off Reed's tie, telling him to loosen up, Reed swallows and forces himself not to pull away, even though Warren is looking at Reed's throat like he wants to eat it for dinner. "Oh, that's terrible," Warren says, glancing up at the news. "It's an editorial about eliminating the debt of third world countries." Reed glances at the TV involuntarily, as though something there might give him more information. Excusing debt isn't going to help them gain sound financial footing. Reed doesn't agree, but somehow he thinks he's not supposed to have an opinion. "I've never really thought about it," he says mildly, and reaches for his drink. "Hey, you," the bartender calls between them, and he and Warren both look over to where she's pointing at a couple of women giggling over their drinks. "If you drop it, you buy it." Reed glances back at her quickly enough to catch the end of a smooth sleight of hand, switching their drinks. Whoever she is, she's very, very good. When Warren looks back, Reed's got his drink in hand and takes a long drink. Warren's smile gets bigger, and the bartender looks at them briefly and walks to the other end of the bar. "Listen," Warren says, "why don't we take this somewhere less crowded?" "Bottoms up," Reed says, tipping his drink up and emptying it. "It's real whiskey. The last one was watered down cola." He coughs a little, and Warren claps him on the back. "All right," Warren says, leaning forward to grab his own glass. When he does, a thick chain slides across the opening in his shirt, and Reed involuntarily shivers. Something clings together as he shifts, and it sounds like it could be the rings their unsub has been taking as trophies. "You're a necklace type of guy," Reed asks, holding his breath, not sure if reaching for the necklace would get him in hot water. He reaches for a button instead, and Warren's eyes go big as Reed slips the button through the buttonhole. "You're just raring to go, aren't you?" Warren asks, putting a hand on Reed's to still it. He presses Reed's hand against the trinket, and he can definitely feel several rings. "That's it," Reed says, wrenching his hand out of Warren's grip and stumbling backwards. "He's our unsub." "What?" Warren says, reaching out for Reed. Reed stumbles back a little and comes up against Hardison, who puts a steadying hand on his shoulder. Elliot steps in front of Reed, but before he can do anything more than be menacing, the bar's door crash open and his team is coming in, guns aimed at the unsub. "Warren Miles, you're under arrest," Hodge says, and Reed lets out the breath it feels like he's held since he walked in here. "Okay," Reed says, turning around to face the guy who may or may not have helped him catch the unsub. "Thanks." Hardison grins, smacks him on the shoulder and says, "Hey, no problem. How about drink?"